But right now, Keith, we want to talk about a change that I suspect has been so profound in our lives in the last 20 years, we can't see the woods for the trees. Our head is still spinning to some extent, I think. We're talking about the World Wide Web.
Yeah, it would be the equivalent of sitting around in the 1830s and wondering what the Industrial Revolution was going to do.
Right.
Not only to yourself, but to your kids and to their kids after that. In this case, it's happened within a generation, within 20 years. 20 years ago, computers were this. Well, I just read something that suggested they were the size of a basketball court. They were at least the size of a very large room in an office, which had to have a lot of money in order to afford one. There was no such thing as a home computer. And yet, it was 20 years ago that the first websites were introduced, and therefore the notion of an internet was underway. It took a while, didn't it? When did you first start using the internet, you reckon, personally?
I couldn't put a date on it, Keith, but I suppose I've really only got immersed in it in the last 10 years.
Oh, really, yeah.
Well, I would think so.
I guess I was a little early. It was about 95, and I can remember the fellow who still runs the Postcards SA website saying to me, have you heard of this thing called Google?
I can remember when Google first came in. Prior to that, it was Alta Vista. We were always using that.
But we were using search engines. So maybe you do go back a bit further than you think, because that was in the mid-90s.
Yep.
And yet then it was, maybe it was a nerdy thing to do. And yet now, if a kid hasn't got a notebook, in fact, they're complaining about the computers that were handed out during the education revolution as being too old and too slow.
So what have we won? What have we gained? And maybe what have we lost in all of this?
The IT commentator extraordinaire, Still Guerin joined us. Good morning, Still Guerin.
Good morning, gentlemen.
It is a staggering thing to think that in your time, in maybe less than half of your life, this revolution has taken place.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the stuff of science fiction. I mean, who would have thought? It actually hit me the other day. I have, you know, a smartphone in my pocket and realised, oh, hang on, I need to get some cash out. So I picked up the phone, pressed the button marked Google Voice Search, and just spoke bank name, ATM, and the suburb I was in, and 4 seconds later, I've got a map showing me where.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, that's just in the pockets of half of Australians now have a smartphone.
And a smartphone is a computer.
Absolutely, it's just a pocket-sized computer.
And it's connected to the web.
And it's more computing power in your smartphone than the entirety of NASA had when they put man on the moon.
In your smartphone.
In your smartphone. It's actually a lot more. That's like I've been saying that number now for years. I've got to pick another one, because NASA in 1969 or something. Actually, there's more computing power in your smartphone than in the space shuttle.
Wow. There you go. Now, because that's old, isn't it? That's 30 years
old.
Oh,
God, it's the same thing. Yeah, the shuttle's computers. They take their laptops with them, their iPod.
Now, so what we're experiencing is not only is the actual universe into which we go changing, but the way we access it. Is that maybe the biggest change of all, the way we access it?
That's one of them, certainly. You know, it's now all sorts of devices. And, in fact, one of the predictions I will safely make, I mean, I'm predicting the future is, you know, especially hard, is that most of the things connecting to the internet, or to the web, I should say, will not be humans. They'll be the gadgets that you have, the little software programs that you run that are doing things on your behalf. Because,
as an example?
Look, at this stage, you might have a device. We have this now, actually, but gadgets that know the kind of things you're interested in, and therefore will look at the TV schedules and make sure to record the program that you're interested in. And you don't have to tell it that, because it watches and says, hey, you were really into watching that documentary about Spitfire fighters from World War II, so there's this other one about the German fighter planes. We'll just record that for you in case.
Okay, so that's at the kind of leisure end. What about at the, as I mentioned, the Industrial Revolution? What's happening to industry and our jobs and our futures?
Well, what's happening an awful lot to jobs is that they're going offshore to places who work for a tenth of what you might charge.
Mm-hmm.
One of the huge things that's there, and it's an Australian company that's actually the world leader in this, called Freelancer.com. They actually have people mostly in the third world who can do work over the internet, bidding for jobs that people in richer nations, like the US and Australia and so on, put up the work on the web and say, hey, we've got these documents that need to be translated from French into English, or we've got 1,000 pages of scanned financial reports, and we sort of just need them keyed into this accounting system, and it's just pure grunt work. But rather than paying, you know, $20, $30, $40 an hour for a temp here, they'll get someone to do it for $3 an hour out of Nairobi, and they're making a fortune by their standards, and the Westerners are saving a lot of money. Now, there's an interesting question there, of course, about what does that do to Australian workforces? Yeah. Or, you know, are we exploiting someone or not? But it's certainly a big change.
And I suppose then you can go to shopping. There's been a lot of talk just in the last few months about how the old bricks and mortar, as they call them, the shops down in the main street are suffering because we can buy anything we like from anywhere we like.
Well, that's right. And it's interesting to look at those complaints because you see it comes from a lobby group that represents the few big department stores that have failed to adapt. Yep. But you actually look across the board and, you know, people are still spending pretty much the same amount of money that they generally spend. It's only up or down a couple of percent, you know, year to year. And if businesses are caving in on a couple of, you know, dollars change, there's something weird going on there. No, I mean, people do shop online. I mean, I for one, don't go into department stores or even big supermarkets anymore. They're horrible places.
Now, and still, in fact, the good news is that you can have a place, you know, down South Road at Morford Gardens that's selling whatever they have got onto on the web. They can be selling them to the Canadians or the Brits.
Exactly. And you look at the growth rate in those sorts of places, and it's amazing. So what we have is, you know, the old-style retailers whinging that they aren't getting the customers anymore and want the government to do something about it. And, you know, the other guys on the other side are busy, you know, starting up their businesses, having a go, and if they're successful, they don't bother going to talk to newspapers about it, or radio stations. They pick up their customers online.
Still, Garian, I must have been about 5 or 10 years ago, I was thinking, probably foolishly, that this rate of change was slowing down, but that's not the case at all. It's just it's just going and going, isn't it?
It does, and it snowballs because as more people put information online, and there are more people online, and everyone, you know, loads into Facebook what all their preferences are, and then some other shop that sells products, you give permission for them to look at Facebook and then says, oh, hang on, look, there are all these things that you might like to buy, and I notice your friends have recommended them. So, you know, all this information sharing happens, and then you get a very personalised experience building up. And then, of course, this then becomes the infrastructure for more and more stuff to come on, and it's all getting cheaper to build too.
Of course, there are lots of caveats. There are lots of warnings you'd put into place about sharing all that information.
Well, yes. I mean, that's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, it's relatively harmless to say, hey, we happen to know what size shoes you wear and here's this month's special. But, you know, how do you know that someone is not doing something nefarious with your data? And that's going to be a big political issue, I think, coming up in the future. There's been some backlashes, for example, the social network LinkedIn, which is kind of a professional social network for people sharing business contacts and looking for job opportunities and so on. They got a lot of flack the other week when they decided that they would decide if you click the like button on something or you were following a company because you're interested in it, they just decided, oh, that means you give permission for your face and name to be used in ads for that business or product.
Ooh, yeah.
Without asking. They just turned it on. And they did cop a backlash on that. And, you know, this is, and you know, when you see a company that says, oh, we share our information with third parties, like, who is that exactly and what happens with it? And we, as individuals, don't really understand how that might come together because we're not trained to do that, and why should we be?
We touched about 1% of what we could talk about, Stu Garian, but it's been great having you with us. We'll talk again. Thanks very much.
Sure. See you later.
IT commentator Stu Garian, who makes a living out of trying to work out what is happening next.